alphabet and grammar of our emotions are the building blocks of relationships and the bits of data and images that all together form a real live personality who has a life and a boring daily routine. The magic of that boring daily routine eludes historians just as it eludes scientists with their modeling computers trying to imitate it. People record the big milestones in their lives, birth, deaths, and weddings, but unless someone drops a laundry list for future archaeologists to decode, these little rituals tend to elude our understanding. Historian Greg Jenner performs a feat of narrative history in A Million Years in a Day, a curious history of everyday life from the Stone Age to the Phone Age. Jenner says one of the great stories of everyday life, boring little rituals, is the story of tooth care.
It's meant to be really a book about the history of daily life and the kind of things that we all do every single day. Because ultimately we're all humans and we all have basic necessities and there are things we all have to do. Though we live in a very sophisticated world, and I'm talking to you now from, you know, Britain and you're in the States, actually there's quite a lot of stuff that people have always done since the dawn of time.
You talk a bit in the middle of the book about some fashion traits that are hard for us to imagine. In the 1740s, court dresses were so wide that ladies had to shuffle crab-like through open doors one at a time, or else they'd become stuck in them like jackknifing trucks wedged in a narrow tunnel. Of course, you describe them as lorries, not trucks. One can only imagine the difficulty they had in trying to clamber into a raised carriage, given that they were also wearing huge, elaborate, heavy wigs, sported no knickers under their petticoats, meaning the potential for embarrassment must have been immense. You really nail all of these details that we can only imagine about. Such elaborate gowns required considerable assistance to don, but inevitably this outlandish fashion swiftly vanished in the wake of the bloody French Revolution, which embarrassment, you know, was one of the minor problems during the French Revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. Fashion obviously is one of these subjects that I think we all find really interesting, exciting, and fashion has gone through so many different loops through history. So many cultures have had their own way of expressing fashions, and of course, the rich and the famous and powerful have always dressed much more glamorously and politically than the poor. And in that case, I'm describing very wealthy women who are wearing mantua gowns, which are incredibly expensive, very, very wide. They were, you know, sometimes 3 meters in width, and the wigs on the head are very elaborate, they're very heavy, they're expensive, they're powdered. This is a very gorgeous time in history for fashion. But it's not a gorgeous time in history for toilets. But, you know, it's strangely enough, the Georgians, they looked fantastic, but they probably wouldn't have smelt quite so good.
To stay in the ancient world for just a moment, in the Iliad, the warriors Glaucus and Diomedes come face-to-face on the battlefield and are about to start stabbing each other when one of them recognizes the other's name and immediately offers up his armor as a gift. Charmed, the victim puts down his sword and returns the favor, and both agree to maim some other unlucky sod instead. Had they once made a vow over a decent glass of wine? No, their grandfathers had many years ago. What was going on there?
Yes, so this is a thing called xenia, and xenia is an ancient Greek custom of hospitality, and it was passed down through the generations. So if your father or your grandfather had invited a fellow warrior to the house and had bathed them or had paid for their dinner, then it was expected that you would do the same for their child or their brother or the next generation. And so in the midst of this battle in the Iliad, which of course is a poem and a legendary thing, but I think it speaks to the culture of the time, you have these two warriors who are about to kill each other, and they suddenly realize that actually there is something that obligates them to be civil to one another, and that is manners and etiquette. And so the whole system of etiquette and manners can be really powerful, even in the middle of battle. That's why we have manners in the first place. And in the book, I try to track manners and etiquette all the way back to the Bronze Age, back to ancient Babylonia, back to the Egyptians, who had very sophisticated customs about dining together, eating together, as did the Romans. The word companion is a Latin word, meaning someone you share your bread with. So to share a meal was the ultimate in making sure that violence didn't break out.
You know, one of the evolutionary problems with being human is that we end up outliving our teeth, that we are not evolved to the point where we retain our teeth all through our lives. And so this chapter called 11:45 p.m., Brushing Our Teeth, really contains a lot of very crucial history of everyday life. Can you describe why you decided to make a whole chapter on brushing teeth?
Certainly. Well, the idea of the book really is to go through a whole day, the modern Saturday in 2016, and trace through the things that we all do every single day, and then go back in time and find out how far back they go. And when I was doing my research, I was astonished to find that the earliest evidence for dentistry, as in actual surgery, is from 9,000 years ago in the Stone Age. And that's extraordinary. And once I read that, I realized, okay, this is not something modern. You know, dentistry is obviously been going on a long time, so has tooth care. And as you say, teeth are very vulnerable. They're vulnerable to attrition, they're vulnerable to acidic decay, they can become infected, you can die from tooth infection. We know many ancient Egyptian mummies died from bad teeth. And so I decided I would write a chapter dedicated solely to trying to track when people started cleaning their teeth and looking after them, and when it started to get effective. The worrying thing is it's fairly late when proper hygiene kicks in. And certainly your great president, Washington, he had appalling problems with his teeth. He lost all of his teeth by the age of 25, bar one, and he spent his life with dentures made of hippo ivory and other false teeth, and it put him in great discomfort.
So many of our everyday rituals involve digital gadgets of one kind or another. How did you weave the story of those gadgets and how we use them on a typical Saturday into the history of information sharing?
Yeah, I think the most interesting surprise was that there's been very recently, in the past 5 years or so, archaeologists have kind of realized that there may be proto-writing on the walls of Stone Age caves from 20,000 years ago. They keep finding these 26 symbols across European caves. One of them is actually a hashtag. And so that's kind of proof maybe that there are ideas being shared across Europe 25,000 years ago. And then you get to the Bronze Age civilizations of the Harappans in Pakistan or Egypt or Babylonia, and they have really complicated, clever systems for sharing information. They've got beacons which can be lit so that cities can communicate very quickly by lighting a fire, and you have a row of beacons across the hillsides. That was kind of a long time ago, and obviously people since then have tried to come up with more effective solutions for sharing information. But some of the basic concepts behind those ideas go back. Almost everything does. It's really surprising, and I really enjoyed getting back to that.
Greg Jenner, thanks so much for a fabulous read. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, you can spend a lot of time with thinking about, you know, every moment of your day. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Greg Jenner is a public historian and author of the new book, A Million Years in a Day, A Curious History of Everyday Life from the Stone Age to the Phone Age.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.